Tedja Cole's novel, Open City, is the latest Leonard Lopez Show book club selection. It's the story of a young Nigerian psychiatrist who reflects on his life and on history as he walks around Manhattan, a city Mr. Cole describes from a walker's perspective in great detail. When it was published by Random House last year, it won the Penn Hemingway Award, the Rosenthal Award of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, and the New York City Book Award for Fiction. And I'm very pleased it has brought Tedja Cole to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And we hope you, our listeners, have been reading the book along with us. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on our show page at WNYC.org. The biography on your book jacket notes that you're, quote, professional historian of early Netherlandish art. When did you become interested in art, and why was early Netherlandish art in specific a focus?
I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria, and I've been interested in art as long as I can remember. My brother and I used to set up little still lives and draw from them. And then later in high school, also in Nigeria, when I had my chemistry textbook on my desk, I would have an art history text on my lap in order to deceive my parents and myself. So I guess that was always there for me when I came to the U.S.
But it was Netherlandish art, not African. I mean, there's a great European tradition, for example.
It was just a survey of art history.
Uh-huh.
When I came to the U.S., I studied art history, and I ended up getting a master's in African art from the U.K., and then came back to the U.S. And I guess it was just one of those decisions to do something different, to do something that I liked the look of, that was going to stretch me and challenge me.
Julius, the narrator in Open City, thinks a lot about art and about history. And one of the museums that he visits is the American Folk Art Museum. Why write about that museum rather than the bigger, more famous one down the block, MoMA?
Well, I think this is typical of Julius, the narrator of the book, and maybe also typical of my approach to the world. I like the oblique things, the overlooked, the slightly out of place and out of the way things. So something that would take you to American colonial history, for example, a smaller corner of that history, rather than the blockbuster that people are lining around the block for, interests me more.
Well, Julius is very contemplative, very much in his own mind, and the Quiet Museum seems to fit his mood.
Yeah, that's right. And it gives him an opportunity to also talk about things like, you know, deafness and silence and all these forgotten pasts that are around us.
He has a conversation with a museum guard while he's there. It's one of a number of conversations he has with people, usually other black men, who are often overlooked. The guards almost become invisible. Mm. Was that something that interested you as a writer?
I certainly have an experience of going into museums and noticing what you might call a demographic disconnect. Even in New York City, you know, very much the experience of being in a museum or gallery space, and all the guards are black and all the patrons are white. And you can't help but feel some uncomfortable resonance of unfinished histories in that kind of arrangement. So I do end up talking to museum guards and acknowledging their presence, and they acknowledge mine.
And you can't help but notice the disproportionate ethnic imbalance when you're looking at people who work at the post office or who drive taxis or who shine shoes. And this is something
that Julius also
notices.
Yeah, I mean, and I very much believe that there's dignity in labor. There's nothing wrong with, you know, being a museum guard or a cab driver. But it is kind of a feature of the way our society assorts itself at the moment that the museum patrons end up looking quite different from the people who are sort of securing that work.
On the other hand, is the fact that Julius is from Nigeria estrange him from the African-Americans he meets in the same way that African-American visitors to African countries tell me that they are always expect to be greeted as brothers and are actually treated as just American tourists?
Right. A hokey beginning I was going to do for Open City, which thankfully I did not do, but which was part of the thinking behind the book, was Julius starting out by saying, I was white until I came to America, and then I learned that I was black, which can be sort of the experience of somebody who's of mixed race, who has one white parent, and that's not the case for me, but for someone like Julius, one white parent and one black one. In Nigeria, you're sort of considered white, or at the very least, a foreigner. And when you come to the U.S., you're made to understand, in no uncertain terms, as is the case with our president, that you're black and nothing but. So,
and probably born in Kenya.
Yeah, that's right. Probably born, and you know, obviously a Muslim, etc. And so he's negotiating that that divide and learning who he is and the different parts of his identity, and at the same time, being wary of being recruited to other people's causes and other people's hurts. So he's very selective in what he engages with.
My guest is Teju Cole, who has written a novel called Open City, won a lot of awards, published by Random House, now available in paperback from Random House. Open City is also the title of a famous film by Rossellini with a very different sensibility. This actually comes out of a tradition, I think, of what my brother once called the bachelor narrator, people who are alone and who notice what's going on around them because they're not in couples, which is a very different kind of experience of your environment.
Yes.
And he's also a photographer, as you are.
Yes.
And so he looks at the world in a different way.
Yeah. So you're thinking of things maybe like the moviegoer and just the general walker in the city tradition.
The flaneurs go on.
The flaneur. You know, one interesting question that's come up for me that people have asked me is, coming out of their struggle in reading the book, and I think that word is appropriate because some people do struggle to read it, is whether I think of it as African literature, because there is an expectation of African literature being somewhat more social or in some way ethnic or providing certain forms of comfort to the reader, which I generally do not provide in this book. My answer is that it is absolutely an African novel because I'm an African and I wrote it. So we're just going to have to expand our idea of what African literature is to include this book. I sort of insist on that.
Well, yeah. There are people in Africa who are loners.
That's right.
And there are people who live in their minds. And there are people who sometimes don't always tell the complete story, complete
That's
truth.
Right. And there are people
there are all sorts of other traditions that probably are as African as they are any other part of the world.
Precisely. And it's kind of an argument for the modernity of the African person who can be social and be in a group and et cetera, but who can also be an emigre, an expatriate, or an immigrant who is in a foreign place and having a complex sort of life.
Now, I mentioned that you're a photographer, and photography plays a major part in this book as well. Julius, you have a visit to the International Center for Photography, where Julius looks at the photographs by Martin Mukashi, Hungarian.
Yes, Hungarian.
Can you describe his work and why Julius is so drawn to it?
Mukashi was he's certainly more than a footnote in photographic history. But one important thing about him is that a photo by him inspired Cartier-Bresson to become a photographer. Blew Cartier-Bresson's mind. It was a photo of three boys running into the surf in somewhere in Africa. Strangely enough, we're not sure if it was in Tanganyika, as was then known, or Sierra Leone. It's uncertain. But this photo changed Cartier-Bresson's attitude towards photography. And the reason I put him into this book in particular is that he is somebody whose photographic style has so much to do with vantage point of view. Photos from way up top, almost an aerial view, photos from below of people jumping. And vantage point and point of view has everything to do with what I was trying to do in Open City. So we have lots of scenes of somebody standing at a window looking out into the street. Somebody's in an aeroplane thinking about the city below. The subway scenes. There's a scene around a well. And that's what I try to do in my photography, try to find a different vantage point from which to get the image.
And Cartier Bresson is associated with the concept of the decisive moment. Yeah. Julius thinks one moment in all of history was captured, but the moments before and after it disappeared into the onrush of time. Only that selected moment itself was privileged, saved, for no other reason than its having been picked out by the camera's eye. Yeah. Although, as somebody who has tried to capture that decisive moment, and usually is one moment too early or one moment too late.
That's right.
There's a reason Cartier Bresson is a great photographer.
That's
and I'm
right.
Not.
For most of us, at most times, we fail to capture it. Cartier Bresson certainly is one of the big shadows that falls across this book and what I'm doing in it. And for that reason, I do not name him.
A listener, Colin, left this comment. He said, I loved your book and have been recommending it to friends since I read it last year. Thank you. My question, do you think about adding photographs to the text, and what do you think the advantages, disadvantages of doing so would be?
Some of my favorite books are actually works of fiction that have photographs embedded in them, such as a very early example was Coming Through Slaughter by Michael Ondaatje. And more recent examples, the works of Sebald. So I like it as a technique, actually. I think it can complicate what's going on in the text. In this particular book, I chose not to have photographs because the book itself is already so densely descriptive and so photographic in its sensibility that I didn't really want to gild the lily. And also, I didn't want to try my editor's patience.
It also costs more money to reproduce and get permission. And
oh,
all
actually,
that.
I wasn't thinking of all that. I would have used either my own photos or found photographs.
Nan from Westchester left this comment along these lines. She says, Mr. Cole's observations of New York City are so exacting and evocative, causing me to wonder whether he wrote it on location or from memory. Could you speak about your process a bit?
Yeah. I myself am an avid walker, and I would often go on several miles long walks in the city. And so a lot of this sort of comes out of my experience in those spaces. Now, there might be something that I said at night that I have walked during the day, or I might, you know, divide up walks or string them together. But it's, for me, it's important to say that this is a work of fiction, and it's more invented than not, but I make sure I get my facts right.
But should I assume that the things that Julius witnesses as he walks around New York, things like Marathon Day in Central Park, a red-tailed hawk in a tree in Morningside Park, the way a subway car takes on a certain mood depending on the people riding it, they must have been informed by your
That's exactly what you should not assume.
Good, okay.
Yeah.
The book mentions that many New Yorkers can relate to things like bedbug infestations and the honeybees mysteriously dying off. So this is almost like the decisive moment idea, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, a strange thing I can kind of compare that to is the way stand-up comedy works. This is not a book that contains many jokes. It maybe contains one or two at the most. But there's something about the sensibility of a comedian who taps into collective knowledge in order to... So many jokes begin, have you ever noticed, blah, 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 and then there's a laughter generated out of subverted expectations. And for me, writing so many of the passages in this book was trying to figure out those things that we all deal with and we've all noticed, but that have not necessarily been articulated, our anxieties as well as our pleasures.
Among the things that have changed downtown, especially, are places where suddenly security is a lot tighter than it was before 9/11.
That's right.
And do you feel that the city is feels unsafe?
Well, it's more complicated than that. This is a book about mourning and about the uncompleted mourning of post 9/11 New York. We do live in a sort of security state, but we also live in a state of anxiety. And I felt the only way I could get at those issues was indirectly, sort of a sidelong glance and to try to come to terms with the many different things that might have created this moment. And what I found was that what created this moment went far beyond 9/11. It's much, much older than that. We actually live in a sort of a psychically congested space. And Julius tries to draw some of that out.
The selection for this month's Leonard Lopez Show book club is Teju Cole's Open City, now available in paperback from Random House. There's a lot of history in this book. You write about Native Americans in New York, about World War II in Belgium. Mm-hmm. In fact, Julius goes to Brussels, about Uganda, Rwanda, about the slave trade in New York City. Mm-hmm. So you are not just wandering around. You're doing a little research here. But the history you weave into the story doesn't come across as didactic or heavy-handed. It's very natural. That's something you obviously were very conscious of trying to achieve.
Yeah. This is a book that does not have a great deal of plot. It's very much about voice and the voicing of the story. So in addition to paying attention to the language and the cadence and the rhythm of that, a lot of that comes out of my reading of poetry. I also try to pay attention to the kind of way that the mind might deploy information of this kind, how one thought would lead to another. And so what I did was I generally sat down to write without prior research so that it had a sort of natural flow out of my own knowledge of those things. And then I would go back and cross-check facts. And so the effect that has is that there's a great deal of factual information, but then there are also significant gaps so that it...
would be in real life.
Right, so that it does not read as if I downloaded something from Wikipedia.
But Julius is an intellectual. He shares a lot, but also seems to keep his readers at a distance.
Yeah.
So when did you realize you wanted to create this kind of narrator and develop that kind of voice? Was that there from the start?
I think that was there right from the beginning, because part of what... I was sort of exploring, I mean, to go back again to the idea that there's this African guy, he's not particularly friendly, and all of that, you know, if you think about Miles Davis turning his back to the audience, I think maybe there's nothing that quite disconcerts an American audience like an unfriendly minority person.
We expect, you know, we expect the minorities to be ingratiating.
That's right, they should be ingratiating, they should make you feel comfortable. Miles Davis did not care about making you feel comfortable. And Julius, in a way, even though he's showing classic hallmarks of liberalism, both in his learning and in his engagements, he is not ingratiating. And I wanted to test that idea. I wanted to test that.
Now, he goes to Brussels. Yes. And Brussels is interesting because if you go there now, it's a major international city. And rather nice, liberal city, but it is the capital of Belgium, yeah, which was one of the worst colonial powers in all of Africa, yeah. And so there's a thinking about what happened in Rwanda, for example.
Yeah, and the fact that so many of those refugees actually end up in Brussels and absorb into the general black population there.
It was an open city. Is that where the title comes from? An open city
Brussels
during World War II?
Brussels itself was an open city in World War II. You know, this is a place that's the crossroads of Europe. It was important for the Napoleonic Wars. It was important in World War I. It was important in World War II. And when we say important, what we mean is that ridiculous numbers of people died there for no good reason whatsoever. I mean, the Belgium and these places where all these countries meet. So I wanted to just sort of do an exploration of spaces that might be enjoyed by a certain kind of tourist as delightful, you know, something you read in your weekend supplement. And for me, as well as for Julius, traveling is actually can be a psychologically oppressive experience, because each place is weighted down by its own unseen history.
Are the cruelties of the past always present in Julius's mind? It seems like the massacre of Native Americans by the first settlers is as much in his thoughts as more recent events, the Rwandan genocide or 9/11 or the civil war in Liberia.
Yeah. The points of divergence between Julius and myself are significant. And I have to say this because the novel is written in sort of memoirish, quasi-biographical mode.
People make assumptions.
People do make assumptions, but I guess that's sort of the challenge I'm posing to the reader. But one thing we do have in common is the dark view of history, the inability to forget what it has cost us to achieve present tranquility. So I also have a rather troubled view of the historical record. Yeah.
A few listeners have written in with questions about an incident that happens toward the end of the book, and rather than spoil the book for those who haven't read it, I'll instead just ask, how reliable is Julius as a narrator? How well do we really know him at the end of the book?
And I guess maybe this is the point where I don't know who it was who answered the question, you know, what's your novel about, by starting to recite the opening pages of the novel and just saying you can go on from there from beginning to the end. So the novel is about what it contains. How reliable is Julius? I'm sort of happy to leave it ambiguous. Actually, that incident you referred to has given rise to quite a range of opinions.
Because it's such a surprise.
It is a surprise. But I think it is the right of every human being to be surprising. The type that I'm writing Julius against is Tom Hanks. This will come as a surprise to you. But the typical Tom Hanks everyman in a movie who really has nothing interesting about his personality, he represents us on the screen. But Julius doesn't really represent us. He represents himself and his own experiences and the complexity that comes with that, including the part of himself that is not as good as we would wish him to be, or not, maybe even not as good as he would wish himself to be.
When you walk around, do you think about writing? Do you compose things in your head?
Yes, as to the extent that I have any writing rituals or any writing practice, it is very much about how do I put it? It's about taking notes. It's about catching hold of these fragments of everyday life, and so Open City. It's not a particularly long book, but it's rather dense, I think I can say, because it is very much about observation. I always have a notebook with me. When I don't, I write things on my phone and email them to myself. If I'm sitting on the subway and I see something weird, I will write it down.
Now, the next book is not going to be fiction?
The next book is going to be a nonfiction about Lagos, Nigeria, the most interesting and rowdy and raucous and infuriating city, the city of my youth.
In our second hour, I will be announcing the next selection for the Leonard Lopate Show Book Club. This month's has been Teju Cole's Open City, now available in paperback from Random House. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you very much, Leonard. It was a pleasure. Thank you.